Well, I think we're going to get started here this afternoon. Good afternoon to everyone, and welcome to today's Weber Training Teleclass. My name is Nicole Kenny. I'm delighted to be today's moderator and have the distinct pleasure of introducing today's faculty, Dr. Michelle Elfa. Dr. Elfa is a professor in the Department of Medical Microbiology at the University of Manitoba, and she's also the medical director for the Clinical Microbiology Discipline Diagnostic Services of Manitoba. She's worked for the past 20 years as a certified clinical microbiologist, involved with teaching and research in the areas of hospital-acquired infections. Dr. Elfa has received awards for her teaching, research innovation, and contributions as a microbiologist in Canada. Her research focus includes medical device cleaning and disinfection with the objective of reducing the risk of infection transmission. In addition, she also does research related to Clostridium difficile and the role of spores in the environment as a means for nosocomial infection transmission. I think a perfect pairing for today's teleclass topic, microfiber cleaning. Is it all it's been cracked up to be? Dr. Elfa, take it away.
Now, thanks so much, Nicole, for the kind introduction. And I love the part when you said certified, because I thought, oh, my gosh, it sounds like I've been certified to the Institute for the Mentally Deranged, which would fit very closely with my personality, too. But thanks for the introduction. I appreciate it. And welcome to all the participants in the teleconference today. I will say next slide as we go through them, and I'm hoping that you've got either your printouts or your slides in front of you. Microfiber and cleaning and environmental cleaning certainly has been one of the issues that's been dear to my heart as it pertains to trying to reduce the transmission of hospital-acquired infections. So if you can go to the second slide, I've listed a whole pile of disclaimers. I've been sponsored for talks in a variety of places, have licensed a test soil, and certainly have been involved in studies and consulting for companies. None of these really have anything to do with my presentation today, but I just like to put it up to be transparent. So the third slide, which is really pertaining to today's class, the overview for this is really, I thought I would like to touch again on what is environmental cleaning and disinfection anyway, and the concept of cleaning versus disinfection, and to try to touch a little bit on how the guidelines that we use as our beacon in terms of our approach, there have been some changes in them, and just want to touch on those briefly. And then touch briefly on the whole issue of cloths that are used in cleaning. And I'll try to throw in a few words about what the guidelines say or don't say regarding this issue, because most of the guidelines are very, very light on information regarding the types of cloths. And I'll touch very, very briefly on room decontamination technologies, only because I want to put the cleaning with cloths in the context of some of the new technologies and issues around those. And then I'll try to summarize. As with all of my presentations, many of you out there that I'm speaking to are very, very knowledgeable about what the issues are and probably very knowledgeable about a lot of the information in the guidelines and in terms of cleaning cloths. So my goal today is I hope that there will be a few little gems in my presentation that will either be helpful to you in your own setting or will at least make you think about things in a slightly different way and maybe say, well, this is something I need to look into. So that's kind of the goal for the session today. If you go to the next slide, this one is entitled Best Practices for Environmental Cleaning for Prevention and Control of Infections in All Healthcare Settings. And if you don't have this guideline or you don't have a provincial adaptation of it, because some of the provinces have developed their own adaptation of it, I would highly recommend that you get it, because it's one of the it is the first, to my knowledge, in Canada for a healthcare environment that has tried to put all the information together regarding environmental cleaning and the issues around it in a healthcare setting, because it's very different than it is in, for instance, a hotel setting where, you know, there's lots of guidelines and information for that in terms of streamlining it. But in healthcare, it's a whole other ballpark. It is available basically free of charge. You can Google it, and you will be able to bring it up. So if you don't already have a copy, I would highly recommend that you get one, because it's an excellent reference to use as you address the issue of environmental cleaning. So if we could go to slide number 5, the next slide. So what is environmental cleaning anyway? there's always this dichotomy between the concept of cleaning, which is basically using either a detergent or not with physical action. And the objective of cleaning, the physical action of it, the objective is to remove the debris and the organic material, including patient secretions and, as much as is possible, microorganisms from the environment, particularly in the healthcare setting. Now, the reality is that and I'm going to make a little touch here, the Canadian guideline that kind of dealt with this issue amongst all the other things it was dealing with, the Health Canada guideline, did emphasize the physical action, and indeed so much to such an extent that, about 8 to 10 years ago, there was a consensus thought process that we didn't really need disinfection per se, that really the emphasis should be on the physical action of the cleaning and using a good detergent to clean healthcare environment. And you're going to see as we go through this that viewpoint has shifted somewhat, and there's some very good reasons for why that is. And that brings us to the second bullet on this slide, which is disinfection. So disinfection means the killing action, and exposure to the disinfectant or the agent kills microorganisms. Now, the agent could be a chemical, or it could be, and that chemical might be in the form of a liquid, a vapor, or a gas. And the other types of disinfecting approaches may be UV light or steam, and those are just a few examples, because it's important to recognize that. And we're going to touch on this at the very end of the presentation. You know, how does cleaning with cloths fit into this whole scheme of things when we see all these new technologies coming out? And it's important to recognize that there are cleaning agents that are a detergent and they have physical action as part of the process that make no claim to killing microbes. And there are cleaning agents that certainly have label claims regarding killing ability or disinfection for that chemical that's being used. And when we come to looking at environmental cleaning, the whole issue is, what is your facility using? Is it using a detergent and relying on physical action for the removal? Or does the agent have a disinfecting capability? Or do you do a two-step procedure whereby there's cleaning done, and then disinfection after that? There's many different combinations of how these two components can be combined. And as I mentioned earlier, the Public Health Agency of Canada guideline that was drawn up, I think it's 1997, it's a number of years ago, it emphasized mostly cleaning and the physical action and didn't have specific recommendations, in fact indicated that disinfectants weren't actually needed in healthcare. So, you know, that has changed. If you can go to the next slide, which is slide number 6, I'm going to refer a lot to the PIDAC document. It's the one that I showed you earlier in my slides. It was developed in put out for public consumption, I guess, in 2009. And the other guideline that's out there as well is the CDC guideline, also related to healthcare cleaning and disinfection. And the approaches in the CDC guideline are the recommendations in terms of disinfection is very close to what it is in the PIDAC document. But because PIDAC is Canadian, I'm going to refer mostly to that one. So the PIDAC document breaks down the environmental cleaning into two broad categories. One, the non-patient care areas, and they recommend that the approach taken in the non-patient care areas, so that would be your foyer, places like your cafeterias, that type of thing, that basically the focus should be on cleaning, no different than it would be in a hotel or a restaurant, that the basic tenet would be you want to keep it basically clean. The second category they make is patient care areas, and it's very clear in the PIDAC and the CDC guideline that in addition to cleaning, there is also a need for disinfection. And that disinfection and cleaning absolutely needs to target the high-touch areas. Obviously, you still need to do other areas as well, but for sure those high-touch areas like the bed rail, the button, the door to the doorknob to the bathroom, those types of things, absolutely need cleaning and disinfection. And the reason for that is we're becoming, more and more aware about transmission of hospital-acquired infections and the importance of disinfection in the environmental cleaning process. We all know that when we have an outbreak, one of the first things that attention is put to is the housekeeping services and the issues around environmental, to make sure that, you know, the environment isn't posing a reservoir for organisms that can be transmitted to other patients. The frequency with which the cleaning or the disinfection is done in patient care areas is often determined by the site and the risk stratification, but almost invariably, as a bare minimum, each patient care environment would be basically cleaned and disinfected on a daily basis. If there's a decision to increase that frequency, it's usually based on a risk stratification. So many centers, if they have a C. diff outbreak, or they have a patient on isolation precautions because of C. difficile, in many instances, their policy will require twice daily cleaning and disinfection of that room, as opposed to the once daily that is the routine. But the frequency is something that's based on, or is takes into consideration, the risk stratification. So as an example, in the OR setting, the frequency of cleaning is obviously different than it is in a routine ward patient care area. Now, the other point that is put in the guidelines, which is a new one, if you looked at guidelines 10 years ago, you wouldn't see this, but the concept of the last bullet that I've got there, which is compliance monitoring. It's becoming more and more apparent over the last, I would say, 8 years or so, that the housekeeping staff do the best they can. There's a lot of pressures that put onto them, discharge rooms, pull them away from their routine cleaning. There's many, many nuances to it. And the concept that the staff themselves may be trying to do the best job they can, but without a means of monitoring that, you really have no idea how compliant they've been, because an environmental surface may visually look clean, but in actuality it has not been wiped and does have secretions and microbes present on it that could contribute to transmission of infection. So one of the things that's now working its way into the guidance documents is the idea that healthcare facilities should have a means of monitoring the compliance, and whether that's using an ATP service monitoring or whether that's using a UV detectable marker monitoring. There's no, how will I put it, guidance in terms of what system to use, but the idea that visual inspection isn't adequate to assess that there has been compliance with the cleaning in the healthcare facility. Because the basic tenet is, even if you use a disinfectant, if you don't put it on the surface, it's obviously not going to have the intended effect. And so that's where the monitoring comes in. Now, if we go to the next slide, slide number 7, it says, why use a disinfectant in healthcare facilities? And Google Images is wonderful. I love the picture of this man. I can't believe that somebody actually looks like that, or maybe they photoshopped it, but it's just a beautiful picture to epitomize a vision of agony and suffering and illness. But the whole point is that there's more and more evidence that the environment does play a role in infection transmission. And that role can be from the environment directly to the patient. And one classic example of that would be the patient goes to use a washroom, a toilet, which is in a shared bathroom facility, and a patient in the adjoining room has C. diff infection, and the patient A, who's gone in to use that facility, acquires on his or her hands spores of C. difficile, and they don't wash them, and then they go back and they eat their meal and they're ingesting spores, and they if they have the risk factors, may become ill as well. So that's an example of where the environment, the presence of the organism was there and the patient picked it up directly. The other scenario is where the staff people coming into the room touch environmental objects, acquire them on their gloves or their hands, and then touch or interact with the patient and basically transmit it. And I'm not going to go through the data today to support that. Certainly there's a beautiful review of the evidence in the PIDAC document. So if you want a review of the data to support the fact that the environment does play a role in transmitting infections either directly to patients or to staff and then to patients, have a look at that review. But certainly the studies that have been done and documented that if you get admitted to a room and the previous patient in that room had MRSA, that the odds of you picking it up and carrying it are actually quite high. Very powerful evidence that the environment was the reservoir that may form the source from which patients get these antibiotic-resistant organisms. And the other information that's out there is staff going into a room and saying, well, I'm not touching the patient, so I don't need to put on my personal protective equipment. And they've done studies to show that even if they go into the room and they don't touch the patient, there's a fairly large percentage of them that if the patient actually has MRSA, and even if they don't touch the patient, they themselves can acquire it on their hands, whether they're gloved or otherwise. So I think there's some very compelling evidence that does support that infection transmission from the environment can occur, and it behooves us all then in our healthcare facilities to ensure that we've done our best to make sure that the environmental cleaning is done in a way that reduces that risk. So if we go on to the next slide, one of the things to keep in mind that cleaning agents don't necessarily have microbial kill label claims, and many of them don't. And these detergents may include things like surfactants or enzymes, and very frequently they do not make any claim to have microbial kill. And it's important to realize that they're optimized for their ability to clean, and they're not making any claims that they're actually going to be killing microbes in that process. Certainly, they're optimized for cleaning, and they may remove microbes very efficiently, but there is not necessarily a claim for microbial kill. So when you're making decisions about what detergents you're going to use, you need to be cognizant of that when you're making decisions for healthcare facilities. So in a non-patient care area, choosing a routine detergent may be fine, and that's not a problem. But in the patient care areas, you really want to have something that does have microbial kill label claims. So I've also put down under here, I want to remind people, accelerated hydrogen peroxide cleaners, there are some that are optimized as cleaners only, and they may have no to limited microbial kill claims, but you need to recognize that not all accelerated hydrogen peroxide cleaners actually have really high killing ability either. You know, if you're using something at a use dilution of 1 in 64, you need to realize that chances are that there will be very minimal to, if any, ability to kill microbes at that type of a concentration. So keep in mind, detergents and even agents that in some formulations have very good microbial kill, if those agents are used and their label claim doesn't have any kill claim on it, you need to realize that you're not going to get microbial killing. And these agents are optimized for cleaning, and they rely primarily on elbow grease, the idea that the physical removal is the key thing. Now, obviously, when you're relying solely on physical removal, you have to be very careful that those claws or whatever is used for cleaning doesn't now become a vector for transmitting the organisms from one surface to another portion or another surface completely. Because obviously any microbes on the cloth that are picked up, they're not being killed and certainly have the potential to be spread to another site. So that's one of the reasons why the guidelines now certainly recommend in healthcare patient care areas that there really should be some killing ability as well. So you reduce this concept of transmitting from one surface to another, and also that you will have some ability to eradicate, not just physically remove, antibiotic-resistant organisms that we're concerned about. So if we go on to the next slide, I've listed here some of the hospital-grade disinfectants, and I'm not going to go through them in great detail, but I do want to spell out some of the issues. Certainly chlorine is a hospital-grade disinfectant, and keep in mind the hospital-grade disinfectants need a DIN or a distribution information number from Health Canada, and there's a process by which they get that. So it's a little more tightly controlled than cleaning agents that basically, are not making any killing label claims, so to speak. So chlorine at a 1 in 10 or 1 in 100 use dilution is used for a variety of applications in the healthcare facility. And it's important to recognize that the higher concentrations, like a 1 in 10 dilution, technically there does need to be a rinse to remove the chlorine after it's been applied to the surface and had its effective contact time. Otherwise, you will get you could get discolorization or streaking or residuals that remain there. There are toxic fumes, and there's workplace safety issues, and certainly adequate personal protective equipment or PPE is needed. The accelerated hydrogen peroxide formulations, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not here to promote any particular company, and I put the term TB claim down there just to help group them together, because there's a number of different formulations. Certainly they are cleared for use on surfaces in patient rooms, and these are agents, some of which will have killing ability, certainly the ones with the TB claim, where no rinse is needed and you are going to get a good kill of microbes on those surfaces. There's a large group of quaternary ammonium compounds, or the quats. Certainly those are cleared for use for floors, walls, and furnishing, but they have a very narrow microbicidal spectrum. And finally, the phenolics, which, of course, should not be used in nurseries or in food contact surfaces, and certainly can have been cleared for use in floors, walls, furnishings, etc. And it's a one-step commercial formulation. So that's a range of the types of disinfectants. Now, keep in mind, the quaternary ammonium compounds and the phenolics are ones that have limited killing ability. The two that are listed at the top tend to be ones that have very, very good killing ability. The issues around the disinfectants are whether or not they are good cleaning agents, or whether they're being used solely for their disinfecting ability. And, you know, that's a consideration that needs to be put in the mix when you're deciding what you're going to use at your facility. Are you going to focus primarily only on cleaning, or do you want a combination of killing and cleaning for the product that is selected? Now, going to the next slide, which is slide 10, there's a couple of things I want to raise awareness of. Many of you probably already are well familiar with this, but there are disinfectant issues that you need to be cognizant of when you're making decisions about which disinfectant you would like to select for your facility, and one of them is contact time. Almost all liquids, if they don't have a lot of alcohol in them, once they've been applied to the surface, the liquid on that surface will usually dry within about 3 minutes. And if the contact time that's listed for the disinfectant to fulfill its microbe-killing label claim is longer than 3 minutes, the implication, and I think a lot of sites just aren't aware of this, is that that detergent or that disinfectant needs to be reapplied another time to meet the contact time if it's greater than 3 minutes. And I use 3 minutes, there's no magic there. It's just that we've done tests where we wipe on a surface and then we've timed, and it takes about 3 minutes for most liquids. Alcohol dries quicker than that, but most liquids with no alcohol or not much alcohol in them will keep the surface wet for about 3 minutes. And the reason this is important is because if you're making a decision about what disinfectant you want to choose for your environmental surface cleaning or disinfecting, you need to make sure that the contact time is within what is a reasonable time frame. So for instance, ideally you'd like to have a contact time that's 3 minutes or less, because that means the staff only have to apply it once. If the label claim says it's bactericidal within 10 minutes, that's great, but the reality is you would need to wet that surface 3 times with that compound in order to achieve that label claim for killing. And so it's important that people realize this, and when they're making decisions, they ensure that they have they're getting the kill they want within a time frame that's realistic in the healthcare setting. The second bullet there is rinsing of residuals. Some disinfectants do need to be rinsed off, because otherwise they may cause irritation to the patient's skin if they contact it. So, for instance, bleach, when used at 5,000 parts per million, which is a 1 in 10 dilution of commercially available bleach, theoretically it really needs to be rinsed off, because otherwise the residuals, if somebody were to sit on that or touch it with their bare skin, it's possible that it may cause irritation to them. So that's another consideration. And then finally, the PPE, or personal protective equipment. Some disinfectants actually do require this, because they're such strong agents that you can't just have staff applying them without using the appropriate PPE. So when you're looking at the disinfectants, I think that's an important thing to consider. All of those bullets are important as you're wending through making your decision. And if you're like me, I am overwhelmed and totally confused and sometimes frustrated when it comes to discussions about how do you choose the cleaning agent or disinfectant that you want to use in the healthcare environment, because it's so complex trying to decipher what the label claims actually mean. But if you at least consider these three bulleted points, I think it will help you in wading through some of the considerations that need to be made. Now, what I would like to do is, if you go to the next slide, which is slide 11, I wanted to show you, this is some data from studies that were done in our research facility, and what we wanted to assess was how much of a role does the physical action of wiping play, and how much of a role does the disinfectant capacity of the disinfectant play in ensuring that that surface is a surface that is going to have no organisms on it. And in this particular slide, we tested the ability to kill C. difficile spores, so it was the spore form, and the spore was put onto a research toilet seat, which sounds really hilarious, right? I have bought a number of toilet seats from Home Hardware and brought them to the research lab, and you can imagine the looks I get as I'm walking in the research center carrying five toilet seat lids. It's very exciting. It's a highly technical piece of research equipment that we use. But what we did is suspend the C. diff spores in organic material that contains serum and a small amount of blood. We allowed it to dry overnight, and then what we did in the left side of the graph that I'm showing you is we sprayed. Now, that wouldn't be used in healthcare, but you'll understand why we sprayed, because we wanted to separate the actual chemical action on the spores from the physical plus chemical action. So the data on the left is where, on that dried surface that has organic material and C. diff spores, we simply sprayed the agent on to completely wet the surface, and we left it unwiped and allowed the liquid to dry completely before we sampled the surface to see the agent by itself, how well does it penetrate organic material and kill C. diff spores. And the agent that we tested was 5,000 parts per million of bleach. Now, in the graph on the left, you can see the y-axis is the recovery log base 10 CFU of C. diff spores per site. You can see the inoculum. We put six logs onto each little surface area that we were testing. We spritzed on the bleach and allowed it to sit for until it completely dried. And then we tested, 500 parts per million bleach, 1,000 parts per million, and 5,000. And you can see we get several log kill even with 500 parts per million. 5,000 gives us a much more effective kill, but we go from six logs inoculated down to two logs remaining for the 5,000 parts per million. And the take-home message from that is that the bleach, even at 5,000 parts per million, is not as effective as you might think when it's in the presence of organic material. And if you look at the graph on the right, that was where we sprayed the agent on the surface, allowed it to be in contact for about a minute, and then we wiped the surface, one single wipe with a cotton cloth. And you can see the data shows you the difference between just applying a chemical and applying a chemical and using a wipe. And for 5,000 parts per million bleach, which is on the far right, you can see we saw no detectable spores whatsoever. So the combination of 5,000 parts per million bleach plus the physical action completely eradicated C. difficile spores. A portion of them were killed de novo, and a portion were removed by the physical action, but the combination of those two meant we had no spores left on the surface. So the take-home message from this is physical action of cleaning is critical no matter what agent is used for cleaning and disinfecting. And this gets back to why the guidelines are recommending that there should be some monitoring done to show compliance with the surface having been wiped. Because it's not just putting the agent on, it's also doing the wiping that's important. So if we go to the next slide, now I'm going to switch gears and I'm going to try to get into the cloth side of things. And this is really the prime objective of our presentation today, is to address this issue of is there an approach that's actually better than others? And again, some of the guidelines touch on this and some are totally silent on it. And I put this picture of these cloths. So I've got cotton cloths, reusable, and I've got these nice little lovely white cloths at the top of the picture. And I'm not sure what your facility uses. At one time, our facility did use cotton, what was called euphemistically cotton claws, but it was not purchased commercial ones. They basically used bed sheets or blankets or things from the hospital that were no longer suitable to use in patient care, and they basically ripped them up, and these were rags that were being used. So I've put tidy, nice little claws there, but the reality is in some healthcare facilities, if they're using cotton claws, it could be any type of cotton claws and range all the way from a commercial one to, you know, bed sheets that are torn up and used for that purpose. I've also shown microfiber, microfiber reusable. There's many different types of microfibers, and we're going to allude to some of that as I go through the rest of the presentation. And also, I wanted to include the synthetic disposable ones, whether it's like a J-cloth format or whether it's in a bucket format and you pull them out. I've tried to block out any commercial identifiers on the little bucket system because, again, I want you to think of the different types of claws that can be used in healthcare facilities. And kind of the tenet of the talk for the rest of my talk is going to be there's been a lot of hype about microfiber, and does it really live up to some of the hype that has been out there? But don't lose track of the fact that it's not just microfiber claws that are out there. There's cotton claws, there's the synthetic disposable ones as well that many people are making decisions about as well. So if we go to the next slide, which is slide 13, now the only guideline that I'm aware of that actually makes any mention of the type of cloth is the PIDAC 2009 guidance document, and in it they talk about new technology and they've put microfiber claws under that heading. Now, microfiber claws are quite different in their adsorptive capacity for water or liquids, and also quite different in their capacity to attract and hold dirt, the dust, moisture, grease, etc., and also microbes. So if you look at the picture, microfiber is represented on the left by that little blue polymer that has little green wedges in it. The idea being, a microfiber cloth, each microfiber has huge surface area because of the way the fiber is actually designed. And it's designed so that dirt, dust, moisture, microbes can be trapped in the little wedges of the microfiber, whereas the cotton fiber on the right, which is represented by that gray circle, the surface area is only what is on the perimeter of the fiber. That's the only place on which it can hold dirt, dust, particles, or microbes. So the differences when they're doing cleaning, at least what's put forward as the differences, is the microfiber, as you rub it, the idea is it's got far more surface area and capacity to attract and hold particles, microbes, dirt, dust, etc., than does a cotton cloth. And the other concept is that the cotton basically will leave residuals even after the surface has been wiped because it doesn't have the surface area with which to adhere all of those components. So structurally, they're very different. Functionally, the advantages are listed in that microfiber is thought to have superior microbial removal versus cotton claws. And there's a number of published manuscripts out there, and I'm going to take the time to actually go through what their data actually shows today. The advantages also are increased absorbency, and there's absolutely no doubt about that. Per surface area, the amount of liquid that you can absorb in a microfiber cloth is certainly much greater, tenfold or more magnitude. There's much greater capacity to absorb liquid in the microfibers than there is in a cotton. And I'm talking mostly microfiber and cotton, but disposable types of wipes as well, although they have capacity to absorb, it may not be to the same capacity that a microfiber does. The other thing that's good about it is it requires reduced chemical usage, and by that I mean the amount of liquid you need to have on that cloth is less than what you might need to completely wet a cotton cloth, because the microfibers themselves have a lot of efficiency, and so the need for the amount of chemical may be less. And the other thing is transfer of organisms is touted to be lower on microfiber cloths compared to cotton cloths. Of course, the disadvantages are that they're not to be used with bleaches and or quats because there is some damage that may occur to them over time because we're talking reusable microfiber. And, of course, the higher cost. And I can share an anecdote that I know at our facility, one of the things that happened when they did look at microfiber claws, the staff liked them so much, they liked to take them home. And so there was a lot more loss due to, I can't think of any other word than pilfering, because people liked the microfiber claws so much, they thought, well, I've got a new one here, I'll just I'll take it to my home. And so there was issues around the cost, because not only does each unit cost more, but there's more loss in the system and more replacement that was needed as well. Now, if we go to the next slide, I've stated in the previous slide kind of what is said to be the advantages and disadvantages of the microfiber, but what does the published data say? And that's what I'm going to spend a little bit of time going over in the next few slides. So if we go to the next slide, which is slide 15, one of the very first papers published on this was done by Moore and Griffith in 2006. And what they did is they took six different types of microfiber claws, and they compared them to cotton claws, and they also compared them to paper towels, because I think there's a feeling that in some situations, healthcare facilities may have been using paper towels as their means of wiping surfaces. I'm not sure, or maybe they just wanted the data. And what the test organism they looked at was Staphylococcus aureus, and they put seven logs of this organism, or seven logs of colony-forming units, and they were using steel as their carrier, and they were assessing whether a manual wipe with microfiber was more effective or less effective than cotton claws and paper towels. Now, the interesting thing was that their result conclusions were that the microfiber claws did remove organic material better than the paper towel, and so they were looking to see whether the microorganisms were removed more effectively or not, but they were also trying to assess whether organic material was moved better. So, for instance, often they would use serum as their organic material, and they would look to see whether there was good removal of it or not. And what they found was that microfiber was better at removing organic material compared to the paper towels, and it was about tenfold better. But there wasn't a lot of difference between the microfiber and the cotton from that perspective. And what they did find with the microfiber was the maximum reduction of organisms, the Staph aureus that they were testing, the maximum reduction was about two logs, so they put on seven. And when they did a wipe with the claws with microfiber, they found maximally about two log reduction per carrier. And the other thing they found was that when they did that wipe with microfiber and then wiped another stainless steel carrier, the transfer was about 30 CFU to the clean carrier. So microfiber did have transfer, but it was low transfer. And what they found, it was really interesting looking at the data, because you'll see these are kind of sporadic, patchy kind of conclusions. What they found was that there was so much variability in their data that statistical analysis just wasn't possible. So although they made these statements, there really wasn't any statistical analysis of the data because it had such variability. You know, the stainless steel carrier wiped in the same way may show a one log reduction one time, a two log the next, and there was quite a bit of variability, so they couldn't make a lot of conclusions. And they did compare six different microfiber types, but they said they really, because they couldn't do the statistical analysis, it looked like there wasn't much difference between the six types of microfiber that they used, and the only conclusions they could make was that organic material was removed better by microfiber cloths in general compared to a paper towel. And there was not too much too many conclusions made about microfiber versus cotton. So that was one of the very first studies that was published. And if you're like me, I mean, I read through all the paper and looked at all the data, and I was left with an unsatisfactory taste in my mouth because I felt, well, it didn't really prove anything one way or the other. It did show that organic material had a good reduction. I was disappointed in the amount of microbe reduction. It was only about two logs, and I would have anticipated better than that. And the variability made me feel I can't really hang my hat on this. So let's go to the next slide, which is slide 16. This was the study that was done by Ritala in 2007 and published in the American Journal of Infection Control. And what he looked at was microfiber mop versus cotton mop for hospital floors. And what they used was the quaternary ammonium compared to cleaner only.
And what they found, or what the group found, was that for microfiber, they stated these in their conclusions, that there was a 94% reduction in CFU per site just using microfiber by itself without any disinfectant being used with the microfiber mop. And they also added that using a quat really didn't make much difference in terms of the ability of the microfiber to remove organisms from the surface. And that's what they were looking at. They measured how many microbes were left after that surface was cleaned with a microfiber mop with and without a quaternary ammonium compound being used. What they found was with cotton mops, there was only a 68% reduction in CFU per site, and that a cotton plus a quat resulted in a 95% reduction CFU per site. And the bottom line in their manuscript was that microfiber is more effective at removing microorganisms, and that adding a quat doesn't make any difference to it, but that cotton, although it's less effective at removing microbes, if it's in the presence of a disinfectant like quat, then you get 95% reduction CFU per site. So the bottom line conclusion is microfiber is more effective, but that a cotton with a disinfectant as part of the cleaning basically makes it equivalent to the microfiber without any quaternary. Now, they didn't really look at the idea of, you know, they talked about it, but the data primarily was looking at, okay, what was left on the floor, and this was in patient care areas. And I've got a but there. Now, I want you to recognize, you know, percentages are kind of a funny way of presenting and talking about microbe levels, because there was a 94% reduction, but pre-clean, the level of organisms they're looking at was from about 100 to 137 organisms per site. Now, that's only two logs of organisms. So the testing was done in a real healthcare setting, which I think is very valid, but the microbe reduction levels that they're looking at are, you know, very minimal, because you're going from two logs down to maybe, you know, one log of organisms, and that is a 90% reduction, but it gives you, you know, it's a totally different comparison than if you're taking seven logs and looking to see how much is removed. But what it does show you is that microfiber compared to cotton is going to pick up and remove more microorganisms when it's at this low level, such as you would find on the floor in a healthcare facility. And that if you put a quat into the picture, you'd expect that there should be killing in addition to physical removal, and that's where they get the data. Combination of cotton mop with a quat gives you a 95% reduction. But again, we're talking going from, you know, 100 organisms down to about 10 per site. So that's the data from Rutala's 2007 paper. If you go to the next slide, which is slide 17, this was published in 2008, and Ren et al. Looked at ultramicrofiber, which are very much thinner filaments, and they compared them to cotton cloth. They were assessing, again, a manual wipe, and they were looking at these three organisms that I've listed, MRSA, Acinetobacter baumannii, and Klebsiella pneumoniae, at 10 to the 3 CFU per site. So, you know, mimicking what might be found in a floor of healthcare, the surfaces they looked at were laminate, steel, and vinyl floor, and that's what they used as their test carriers. And they also dried organic material with these organisms for 2 hours or overnight. And what they found was the microfiber was significantly better for removal of all organisms. And the actual reduction was 6 logs for the ultra microfiber versus 4 logs for the cotton cloth that they tested. So here we have some fairly solid evidence that the microfiber, in particular the ultra microfiber, definitely is reducing the level of organisms in the presence of organic material more effectively than cotton cloths, but even the cotton cloths had 4-log removal. Now, you might be kind of in your head starting to think, well, you know what, one study showed cotton cloths had, like, you know, 2-log removal, one showing 4, and there's a lot of variability you can see in here, because if you think about it, we're talking manual wiping, whether it's with a mop or with a cloth, and my manual wipe might be a lot different than your manual wipe. And so there's quite a bit of variability in some of the data that you see in the published literature. If we look at the next slide, which is slide 18, Bergen et al. In 2009 looked at microfiber only, and their assessment was a 16-side protocol with the folding. And I'm not sure why, but they chose the surface that they were cleaning to be a surgical drape, which seems odd, but I guess it's a kind of an impervious surface, so that's what they wanted to do their testing on. And they looked at Enterococcus faecalis and Bacillus cereus at 10 to the 7 CFU per site, and it was in an organic load that was dried 10 to 15 minutes. And the results that they found were, despite the folding protocol, like they would inoculate the surface in an organic material, they would do one wipe with one surface, fold it so that the other surface was done. And what they looked at then was, on 15 consecutive clean surfaces, how many organisms came off that microfiber onto the next surface. And what they found was that 3 to 5 CFU did come off on the subsequent surfaces wiped, despite the fact that they were using 15 consecutive folds of the cloth. Now, the bacillus spores that they tested were much less likely to be transferred than the bacteria that they tested, which was an interesting observation. This says to me, though, they were wiping 7 logs off the surface, and the subsequent transfer to another surface was only 3 to 5 CFU per site. That's pretty low when you think about it. So it would seem that the microfiber can also contribute to contamination of clean surfaces, but in my mind, the data showing here is actually it's quite low transfer of organisms to the subsequent sites. But it does say that even with the 16-side protocol, you may get some low-level transfer of microorganisms. And I don't know about you, but the 16-side folding is very hard to train people for, and it's very hard to ensure that you've actually got them using it in that manner as well. Now, if you go to the next slide, this is one of the most recent ones. This is in ICHI in 2010, and this comparison was microfiber, cotton, sponge, and paper towel. They used Staphylococcus aureus, Escherichia coli at 10 to the 6 CFU on ceramic carriers with an organic load. And again, they assessed using a manual wipe, but in this one, they used a manual wipe that went back and forth 4 times, similar to if somebody was wiping a surface. The results showed that there was a 3-log reduction for microfiber and also for cotton, and that there was only a 1 to 2-log reduction for sponge and paper towel. So I don't know about you, but looking at all these published papers, it's still confusing to me about how things are in terms of how effective microfiber is. It appears as if it is more effective at removing microbes, but kind of the data is a bit all over the place. So one of the things we did, which if you go to the next slide, we wanted to kind of have some more tangible data in a more reproducible manner. And so in our lab, what we did is we did simulated surface cleaning efficacy, and we used a drill rotation device, which is shown in this picture. And you'll see that we used a scale to keep the pressure constant, and we attached the microfiber or the cotton cloths to a stopper so that we had a standardized surface area, constant pressure, and we used a tachometer, which is that black instrument on the right, to ensure that we had the same number of rotations that we were using. So we were using a very standardized lab equipment, and our basic question was, does microfiber cloth remove more microorganisms from the surface, and does it transfer them more efficiently or less efficiently than cotton? And we compared commercial cotton cloths to commercial microfiber cloths. So if you go to the next slide, this is microfiber versus cotton. And, you know, near and dear to my heart is always C. diff spores, so that was our test organism. The microfiber data is shown in the black bar, and the cotton cloth is shown in the white bar. And in this case, what we wanted to do was inoculate the cloth itself, either microfiber or cotton, and show what the recoverable bioburden is, which is the second set of bars that you can see on this graph. So if we elute off of those cloths, how many organisms did we get on out of the inoculum that we put on? How many could we get back after the recovery? And you can see we put on just over 4 logs of organisms per centimeter squared, and we got back most of them when we did our recovery. And then the question was, when you wipe a surface with this inoculated microfiber cloth, how much of those microbes stay on the cloth and how much come off on the surface you have wiped? and that's what is a third set of bars. You can see that the residual level of spores on the claws after we'd used it to wipe a surface in the 10 revolutions, most of the spores stayed on the microfiber cloth. You can see that we have about 3.7 logs out of the 4.1 that we could recover stayed on the cloth, whereas with cotton, there was a less of the spores that stayed on the cloth. We went from just under 3.5 logs down to about 3 logs. And when we looked at the surface and said, okay, how much wiped off on the surface, you can see there was more spores that came off for cotton in the white bar on the far right compared to how many came off of the microfiber, which is the black bar on the far right. So what this data tells us is that the microfiber is able to retain at least C. diff spores better, and there's less wipe-off onto a clean surface compared to a cotton cloth. So the data that I've just described to you in the published literature, our data on a standardized test method would seem to support the fact that the release of organisms from microfiber is lower than the release from a cotton cloth onto a surface. Now, if we go to the next slide, which I believe is 22, and I would like to acknowledge that this data that I'm presenting to you from our lab is data from Adriana Trageman's MSc thesis, so I'd like to acknowledge her work in this area. Now, this was microfiber versus cotton, and the question we are asking here is, if you wipe consecutive surfaces, what's the situation? So the same thing, on the left side, there's the inoculum that was put onto the surface. And this time, it's not on the microfiber cloth, it's on the actual surface. And we used ceramic as our surface. So we put just under 4.5 logs onto the surface, ceramic surface. We used microfiber and cotton on the apparatus I showed you and wiped that surface. And then we looked at, okay, when we now take that and transfer it to a clean ceramic surface, how much comes off on the second surface. So you can see that, again, in the middle set of graphs, the black line represents microfiber, the white represents cotton, and the removal of organisms from the ceramic surface was more effective for the microfiber. It went from just under 4.5 logs of spores down to just over 1.5 logs were left on the surface. So the removal was about a 3-log removal. With cotton, the removal was not quite as effective. It got down to just under 2.5 logs from 4.5. And then when we look at the second surface, you can see that the transfer or release of the spores from microfiber and cotton also differed. And you can see there's less release from the microfiber, the black bar on the far right, that were transferred to the second clean surface versus the cotton where there was more release. So this tightly controlled research testing helps add to the data that's published in the literature, and it is statistically analyzable because it was tightly controlled. Now, it does confirm that microfiber does seem to retain and remove organisms better than a cotton cloth, and it transfers fewer to a subsequent surface, but it does transfer still. It's not as if there's no transfer whatsoever. So if we go to the next slide, this is slide 23. So microfiber, is it all it's been cracked up to be? Certainly the data in the literature has variable studies that do suggest microbes are more effectively removed, and our data certainly would support that. But the removal range is 2 to 4 logs of removal. It's not like if you use microfiber versus cotton, you're going to remove every microbe on the surface. That's not going to happen. Cotton cloths also remove microorganisms, but not as effectively as the microfiber does. But it still tells you that there is still organisms left on that surface. And remember, our testing was done with no disinfectant in it. We just wetted the surfaces with a component that wouldn't kill any microbes. So you can see why there's an advantage to having a disinfectant as part of your cleaning routine, because you don't want those logs left on the surface, and that if you're applying a disinfectant, you're going to get the best of both worlds with physical removal, more effective with microfiber compared to cotton, but you'll still get some removal, and then the disinfectant will kill any residuals that are there, hopefully. Now, the second bullet here is that microbes microfiber does transfer microbes to clean surfaces, but the transfer is significantly less than is apparent in cotton cloths. And for both cotton and microfiber, if you're using a good disinfectant with good killability, the transfer becomes less of an issue because you're killing microbes, not just removing them. So that's kind of the take for the microfiber, and I hope I've presented the data in a way that helps you understand what's in the published literature better. And if you go to the next slide, the last small quick point I would like to make, we have all this new high-tech stuff coming out where we can use UV lights to irradiate patient care rooms and, you know, kill microbes in the environment. We've got the room foggers. We've got all kinds of gadgets that are coming out that claim to be whole room decontamination. And that's wonderful, and we will see how they pan out, and I'm sure there's going to be a place for them in the overall scheme in healthcare. But I think it's important to remember that even if those are used, you still need the physical cleaning of healthcare rooms. And so it's still an important decision. And when you do the cleaning, you need to make sure that those surfaces are effectively wiped. And the idea of whether you need to have a disinfectant in your cleaning cloth, if that's all you're using, I would say absolutely you do in healthcare. If you've got routine room decontamination going on, then you may or may not need the disinfectant. But I would say until such time as these are very well understood and there's more data, that healthcare should be using cloths that do have disinfecting ability because we really need them to reduce the survival of microbes in the environment. So if you go to the very last slide, in summary, it does appear that microfiber cloths do have better bacterial and spore removal compared to cotton. It's about 2 log better ability without any disinfectant component. The second bullet is microfiber cloths can transfer microorganisms to clean surfaces, but at a much lower rate than cotton. And the third bullet is I want to raise the issue. We don't have a lot of data on the disposable wipes versus microfiber, and that might be something that it would be good to see data on because there's a lot of individuals that are looking at the disposable wipe system rather than cotton or microfiber. And then finally, the room decontamination still requires cleaning with cloths, and the question about disinfectant, whether it's needed, at this point I would say yes, until such time as there's a way that the room decontamination, you still need the physical wiping and cleaning, but the issue about disinfectant, we need more data before we can make a decision. And on that note, I will stop. I hope I haven't gone too fast and or put you to sleep. And I hope I've left you with just a few better insight into some of the issues around microfiber cloths and maybe open some questions in your mind, too, about you know, what to do in your own facility. So thank you very much for your attention.
Thanks, Dr. Alpha. That was a wonderfully informative seminar, and I'm certain that many of us have some key takeaway messages and things that we need to look into, particularly for those that do not know exactly what type of cloth is being used. Are we actually using rags, as you found out in your facility? We've managed to bring ourselves right in on time today, and I know that Paul did want to have a quick chat with the group that have listened in regards to next year, 2013's teleclass lineup. Paul?
Nicole, thank you very much. I actually have a question for Dr. Alpha, but I think I'll save that till afterward. And if anybody else has questions, they can email them to me, and I'll be happy to pass them along. I do want to thank all of you for your participation in teleclass education in 2012. This has been a huge year for us. I believe we have tipped over the 90,000 member mark from, I've lost track of how many countries that is, but I think it's around 155 or 156 countries around the globe. And I am very, very honored that you've all taken part in this program. It's a great privilege for those of us who volunteer for it. And it is a completely volunteer-run program. Nicole is one of our volunteers, and there are dozens of us all around the globe. And so I thank you very much for making this possible. I would also like to acknowledge that there is a fantastic teleclass lineup for 2013. Most of those topics are in the schedule now. If you go to webertraining.com and click on teleclass schedule, the 2012 topics are actually still there. You'll have to scroll down below them, and you'll see that at the very bottom, at the very last teleclass of the year, is a lady named Dr. Michelle Alpha, who's giving that talk. And I think that'll be another great one. But there are some tremendous teleclasses next year, and I hope that you will join some or all of them. And if it's possible for you, I would be very grateful if you would consider purchasing a 2013 full-year subscription. This does save your facility a lot of money as opposed to registering for the teleclasses by themselves, and it allows us a little bit more flexibility in our budgeting for the coming year. As you know, we make no budget for advertising. All of the advertising that we get is given to us for free, but we have expenses, and your help in this would be greatly appreciated. So I wanted to again thank you very much for your support in 2012. Nicole and Dr. Alpha, thank you as well. And we'll look forward to talking with all of you again very soon. Goodbye.